This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it?
It's working. I can feel it.
Outstanding. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And tonight we have a new person joining us today. And before I introduce her, first of all, I'm Lou. And we are joined tonight by Nick Hazelton, the anarcho-yakitalist, and he is the Freedom Fiends Youth and Yak correspondent. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing great. I'm in a little bit of pain from my teeth.
That's what I hear. You're chasing the dragon.
Yeah.
Under doctor's orders, of course.
So, yes, of course. Yeah.
So you're kind of like high as a kite right now.
Legal and prescribed. Sorry?
So you're kind of like high as a kite right now, aren't you?
I mean, I'm not too high. I'm understanding what's happening, and I still feel a little bit of pain in my tooth, so I'm grounded.
Okay, well, if you, wait, you're 17. When you say grounded, that mean you're allowed to be on the radio? Are you 17 yet?
Yeah, I'm 17.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, anyway, we are also joined by Lisa DeLascio. She is a writer, and she actually makes a living for it. She's written for the Daily Sheeple under the secret pseudonym Lily Dane. Don't tell anybody. Her interests include voluntarism, anarchy, peaceful parenting, and homeschooling. She also writes for several other websites and is the owner of Nutritional Anarchy. So, welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yes. It's great to have you here. We've chatted a couple of times over the past couple of weeks and very enjoyable. So as far as your website, Nutritional Anarchy, goes, tell us all about it. Tell us everything that we want to know and maybe a couple of things that we don't.
Well, we started the site a couple of years ago. I started it with two friends of mine who are like-minded because we noticed that the government and the mainstream guidelines for nutrition and health really don't align with the truth, which is probably no surprise to anyone. So we started the site to kind of put out more accurate information to people, you know, more of taking care of yourself, you know, researching things on your own, or, you know, rather than just believing the guidelines that are out there that are usually way out of date.
So, in other words, what you're saying is don't believe the government. Don't listen to a word that comes out of its lying, filthy sewer.
Right, pretty much. I mean, for a long time, they were saying, for example, that people should eat a diet based in grain and avoid fat. And more research has come out that has proven that it's actually the opposite, that you should be doing eating more fat and less grain. Usually, it affects health overall. it's much better for you. So we thought, you know, we need to get this information out there.
Okay, I'm not a state apologist, but I'm going to play one on the radio right now. What is this evidence that shows that the government food pyramid is wrong and you should do the opposite of it? What's this new evidence, and how were things before this food pyramid came about, and you know, everything started changing, everybody started having more obesity and diabetes and diet-related illnesses? So.
Well, a lot of it has to do with some research that occurred back in the 40s, I believe it was, and Ansel Keys was the researcher who sort of distorted some studies and manipulated some numbers and made, it was a poorly done study, and he said that dietary fat was the thing that was causing people to have health issues and that we should focus on a more grain-based diet. And there were researchers back then who said, wait a minute, no, you know, this is wrong. The study was conducted, you know, incorrectly, and things are distorted here. We really should be eating more fat and more protein and less refined carbohydrate, less grain, less wheat. And so it took a really long time for the true information to reach the mainstream. There are a couple of documentaries about it that kind of exposed things. There's a lot of research out there. You just have to look for it. So when I was in school, I was working on a master's in nutrition, and I was doing a lot of independent reading. And I started to notice that what we were being taught in school didn't really match what the science was showing. So I ditched my master's program and just learned as much as I could on my own. And the information is out there. It's just that a lot of people just trust what they're reading in the news. You know, they trust the government food pyramid. So they don't, they're just not getting correct information. So it's been a long time that I've been trying to tell people, don't eat low fat. Don't eat high grain, you know, eat real food like we used to do, like our grandparents did before all this processed, you know, agricultural subsidized stuff hit the grocery stores.
Okay, so bacon, lots of bacon.
Yes, eat bacon.
Okay, good. Well, that's what I wanted to hear. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and you guys are going to yak about yak a little bit later, and I'm going to go make memes while you're doing that. But what are the complications from this diet high in grain intake and low in fat? What have the complications been for that?
Well, one is obesity. So there's been a serious increase in that since people started eating a more grain-based diet. If you think about where grain is usually used, it's used to fatten up cattle. That's what farmers use. They feed corn and wheat and other kinds of grain to their livestock to fatten them up. And Nick probably knows about this with his yak. Mm-hmm. But that and an increase in diabetes, all sorts of other health problems, high cholesterol. So people mistakenly believe that high cholesterol is caused by high dietary fat intake. It's actually not. It's more linked to high carbohydrate intake. Increases your triglycerides, which in turn raises your cholesterol levels.
Okay. Now, you were telling me recently about a family member that you tried explaining this stuff to, and this family member was less than receptive, I guess would be a good way of describing it. So how do you get through to these people and get past the indoctrination and the whole, well, government said it's good, therefore it must be, because, you know, praise gov.
Well, usually I have a tendency to dump information on people. So I'll send them links to articles. I'll write an article. A lot of times my conversations with people about these things inspires me to write articles for my website about it. And so I'll just distribute that. You know, whether or not people want to believe me is up to them. I figure that people will come around eventually. And it's usually when, you know, there's an article that hits the mainstream that people say, oh yeah, you know, you were right all along. And I'm thinking, if you were listening to me 10 years ago, maybe you wouldn't have high blood pressure and high cholesterol, but better late than never, I suppose.
Well, that sounds like a nice, friendly, passive-aggressive way of saying I told you so.
It depends on the person. I kind of tailor my response to my audience.
Okay. Now, I understand that, like with the common person, and maybe like a friend on Face Beef, and they're not somebody that you have a real vested interest in, and they're probably not going to be real receptive if you are in their face saying, "Look, get off the grains, put down that bagel, put down that donut, and you know, all that other stuff." And but when you're talking about like a family member, like we were talking about the other day. How will you go like above and beyond to try and present the information in a caring, meaningful way to where, you know, they understand that it's coming from a place of love?
Well, there are a couple of things I'll do. One, I'll ask them how what they've been doing is working for them. So I'll say, you know, you've been following this sort of eating plan for how many years? And, you know, are your health indicators getting better or are they getting worse? And, you know, then I'll wait for their answers there. And then I'll say, you know, are you open to trying something different and just to see what will happen? And if I need to, I'll refer them to studies. I'll offer to send them links to articles. You know, it really depends on how much time I have with a person. You know, my mother in particular tends to be stubborn because I think I'm her child, so I can't possibly know things. But over time, she's become more open to listening to my advice. You know, usually I kind of appeal to other authorities. So what I'm saying, I'll find research that's relevant and refer to that. And there are a few books that I refer to also that I recommend.
Okay, but if it doesn't have that government endorsement, that government seal of approval, does that usually get overlooked, or do they say, no, I want that government seal?
It really depends. Some people really want that. But I'm finding that more and more people are realizing that, hey, you know, the government's been wrong about this for a long time. And, you know, I can kind of point out that, you know, the link between the agriculture industry and the government and the lobbyists and the funding and the subsidies. And sometimes that clicks with people and they see the conflict of interest there. And, you know, they'll say, you know, maybe there's something to this. I need to look into this more. Yeah, some people don't want to hear it. It just depends. I try, but do what
so
I can.
So you appeal to their socialistic anti-business side?
Sometimes.
Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, okay. That's what I mean. I tailor it to my audience. I kind of know who, I get a feel for what kind of sources they trust.
Okay, so for the lefty commie types, you appeal to their socialistic, communistic, anti-market side, and then for the right-wing conservatives, you appeal to their, well, government is stupid, anti-government side.
You could say that. That works sometimes.
Now, don't get me wrong, the conservatives are socialistic and communistic in their own ways, sure. What other type of writing do you do, since we're introducing you and this is your opportunity to tell all?
Well, right now I'm an editor for a mental health website, and I do behind-the-scenes work now. So I don't do a lot of writing anymore, but I occasionally do still fill in at the Daily Sheeple. So when I write there, mostly what I've written about over the years for them is about police brutality cases, government corruption, the IRS scandal. Anything like that that's in the news but isn't really getting a lot of attention in the mainstream media. And we put our own little spin on things, too. So we might get a little snarky or sarcastic about things. One thing that I covered extensively was net neutrality. Back, I think that was earlier this year, there was a lot of talk about that. People thought it was a good thing, but the government was kind of distorting the term. Which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yep. And we'll be right back with more Freedom Beans.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Beans with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. I'm Lou, joined by Nick and Lisa. So, primarily what you write on is nutrition. Where are the websites that you could be found? Where's the best place to find your work?
The best place right now is Nutritional Anarchy, which is my site.
.com.
But my work has been shared on other sites as well. Activist Post is one of them. Ready Nutrition. And also Daily Sheeple sometimes publishes my work. And I've written about nutrition for that site as well.
Okay. I don't know if you listened to the Dangerous History podcast with Prof. CJ, and he's been a guest on the show. And as a matter of fact, he has another appearance coming up sometime soon. It might be this weekend. I'm not positive. But he recently did a show called Grain and the State. I believe that's the title of it. And it's based upon... A lot of it is based upon what James C. Scott has written about in his book, The Art of Not Being Governed, and how areas that have primarily grain-based diets, where it's not as much hunter-gatherer, where it's staying in one location and farming, that type of agricultural community. That's where states have a tendency to pop up because, one, the people are locked into a particular spot. They're not mobile. But also because grain above the ground, so it's not like the different roots like carrots or even potatoes and things like that. Because those are easy to measure and find, of course, they're easy to tax. And, of course, I am sure that fattening people up and keeping them lazy and immobile probably helps the state a lot, too.
I believe so. Yeah, it keeps them dependent on the state. And that's, I think, a big goal. That's why I think a lot of these books that come out that, you know, debunk those you know, recommendations catch a lot of heat.
I'm not so conspiracy-minded that I think that that they're really cunning and calculating and just nailing people down. I think every time they manage to successfully pull off something evil, it's just out of dumb luck.
I think so too. I think that they tend to be their research just outdated. There's bias. Of course, we've got lobbyists who are influencing the information that they're giving us. And money, of course, has a lot to do with it. So I think that it's probably more of that rather than them intentionally trying to harm people.
Yeah, if you look at a lot of the industry, I mean, agriculture is run off corn and milk and grain, right?
That's right.
And the thing is, I mean, grain fattens up cattle, right? It's a great thing to use for a feed. If you want heavy and heavy animals, which produce more meat, and they taste a little bit better than grass-fed, I would have to say. And another note, relating to the USDA, are you familiar with Rebooted Body, Kevin Geary?
No.
Well, he's an interesting guy, and he's into this kind of side of fitness and health. I really like him. I've had him on my show, and you should definitely get in contact with him. But he did a show, maybe it was last month, about the USDA food pyramid, and he had a lot of interesting things to say related to how the food pyramid was created. And there are some little bit of interesting backroom deals between the USDA and some corporate big agra interests.
Right. That's the thing. And that's what I tell people to keep in mind, like, who is benefiting from this information that's coming out. Unfortunately, it's come to that. You know, we have to think about that and be objective and do our own research and use some common sense and figure it out for ourselves.
Go ahead. Keep talking. I'm sending emails to Michael. Speak.
So how do you feed yak then, Nick?
Yeah. So all of my animals, except the pigs, well, I guess I only have yaks and pigs, but all the yaks are completely grass-fed. They get a little bit of hay, but that's grass. And they have pretty much their natural diet. I mean, I'm sure the grasses are a little bit different here in Oregon than they are in the Himalayan steppes. But it's pretty natural there. And my pigs, I do have to supplement their feed, especially when they have litters of piglets. And while the sows are producing milk, I do have to supplement with grain. And that's unfortunate. But, you know, that's just the way it goes. I have to do it.
Right.
But most of the time, you know, they're pasture fed. And now we're out. But we'll come back with it. Okay. Pasture animals, good food on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Now we're back. This is the Freedom Fiends. I'm Nick Hazelton. I'm here with Lou Sanderfien and Lisa, I can't remember your last name, Delasho.
You got it. That's right.
Oh, sweet. That's awesome. And Lisa is a nutritionist, right?
Right.
Yes. And we're talking about pastured meat right now. I raise grass-fed yaks and primarily pastured American guinea hogs, which are a heritage breed pig. And I'm in the business of trying to sell this meat. And part of the reason why I like having these grass-fed animals is it's a natural diet. And I think that obviously would show that, you know, this is good meat. And I guess I'll throw to you, Lisa. What do you think about some of that?
I do. I think that grass-fed meat is not only healthier, but it also tastes a lot better. And it's my preference. That's what I look for when I buy red meat. So is yak red meat, or how is it categorized? I don't know much about it.
Yeah, yak is a red meat. It's a really deep and dark red meat. So it's fantastic. It tastes almost identical to grass-fed beef, and is very similar to bison. It has a slightly different taste, and it's much leaner than beef. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really good.
So what forms do you eat it in? Do you make burgers with it or steaks?
Yeah, any cut that that cows have. It's very similar to beef in that in its anatomy. So anything you can get off a cow, you can get off a yak.
Oh, it's interesting. Is there a big market for that, or is this? How did you get involved in this?
It's very niche. There's not many people in it, and it can be hard to sell sometimes because people aren't familiar with it, and in general, people aren't really looking for grass-fed meat outside of the supermarket a lot of the time. It's becoming more popular. But yeah, I got into it because I didn't want to get into cattle. I just thought that yaks would be interesting, and I went with it. And
So what other products can you make with yak?
What did you say? We'll talk at the same time.
Okay. Have you tried standing out in the corner giving out free samples to get people hooked on it yet?
It's too expensive to do that. Right now, I'm doing pretty good at selling it. I'm starting to make a profit, I think. I had to run the numbers real quick again, but I'm pretty sure that I'm in the green on this particular yak that I had just slaughtered, which is really cool.
Okay, cool. There's a place a couple towns over that sells bison meat. It's an ATV, an outdoor gear shop. So it's like the snowmobile and bison burger store.
Yeah, there's a really big ranch out there in I think it's in Michigan, Great Lakes Ranch. You gotta check into that. Maybe I'll send you some links or something. But yeah. I'm pretty sure there's at least one large, and I'm pretty sure it's in Michigan. Pretty sure.
Well, now I'd be looking for yak.
Yeah.
I think the bison farm is actually in Wisconsin. I'm not sure. Okay. I think I drove past it once when I was going to Agora Fest. Cool. So are you guys still talking about yaks and cows and stuff like that? Because if you're done, I have a very important announcement.
Well, I'm curious about the announcement now, so.
Yeah.
Okay. I have stopped smoking, and this... Thanks, you gave me the clap. I'm going to talk about it today for a couple minutes, and then I'm going to be done with it. Maybe somewhere down the line, if I hit a milestone, I'll talk about it. And if I happen to fall off the wagon, which I don't think that I will, then I will come on here and confess my weakness and shame to our probably 6 or 7 billion listeners here on Earth and our trillions of listeners in Alpha Centauri. But the reason that I have stopped smoking, and I'm not going to say that I quit, because I've been smoking for about 30 years. And when you've been smoking for 30 years, you don't just quit. You retire. The main reason for stopping is I just don't feel good. Now, I'm not going to make an announcement of some like horrible bunch of diseases. This isn't really the teaching hospice tonight. So you won't hear me talking about having to put a CPAP on my colon so that I can sleep and breathe at night. That's not going to happen. bottom line is, I take the stairs at work for the most part. Unless I'm going up to like the fifth or sixth floor or something like that from the basement, I prefer to take the stairs. And going up the stairs kicks my butt. Also, Michael and I were talking about this earlier because he was asking about questions with his CPAP. I get dehydrated a lot easier at nighttime. You know, when it's wintertime, you got the furnace going and it's really hot and dry in the house, you have a tendency to really dry out. And even in the extreme cases, you can wind up getting nosebleeds from it because that's how dry it is. I'm tired of that feeling. I'm tired of really being a slave to this addiction. So what I have done, this is what has worked for me, and I stopped last Friday, and I guess it was good fortune because I was a bit under the weather Thursday and Friday of last week. A little bit of coughing, like I was coming down with a cold, so that always makes it easier. But I've been using the patch, and I'm not sure that it's working very well. I think it was Sunday, I didn't have a patch on for most of the day, and I couldn't tell a difference between having it and not having it. So I think NyQuil would work a lot better than the patch. Mm. And I personally think that my patches are placebos. You know, maybe it's like scotch tape and it says nicotine patch on it. But I'm not really working too well. But I think what makes this time different than the others, because I've only had one time where it worked. I said, oh, it's 10 o'clock, or oh, it's 2:30, time for a cigarette. It's only happened one time. I think what has really made the difference is that I'm ready to stop smoking. I'm tired of smoking, and I've been preparing for this for several months probably right now, really contemplating it, setting dates, and of course, as I got close to the date, because I was supposed to quit on Saturday, as I started getting closer and closer to the date, I started coming up with reasons as to why it wasn't a good weekend to quit, and of course, you know, the desire to quit jumped in and said, you know what? Your good reason isn't so good. So anyway, I set my mind to it, and I haven't had really bad cravings. I do have a new lemon drop addiction, but other than that, you know, it's doing pretty good. No, seriously, I haven't been jonesing. I haven't been having, you know, fits or anything like that. I think that the most important part was being ready and having a positive attitude for it.
That's awesome, Lou. That's something to be proud of, man.
Yeah, congrats.
Yeah, I've been smoking almost twice as long as you've been alive, Nick.
I used to help people quit for a living, and what you said is exactly right. If you're ready and you have the right mindset, then that's 90% of it right there.
Yeah, well, the being short of breath, taking the stairs, that's not it. It's just an all-around not feeling good. So something that I have been doing, because the one thing that still is bothering me quite a bit is I'm used to the inhalation. So I'll take some deep rapid breaths to simulate smoking. And it's probably a little bit more of an inhalation than I would be doing with a cigarette, but anyway, and also, Lisa, I want to thank you for recommending those yoga videos, because I did see like some breathing exercises in there, and then like a 5-minute yoga exercise for work. And you're right, that girl is cute,
isn't she? She's great. She's so happy.
She reminds me of Bridget Moynihan in the movie The Recruit. Yeah.
Oh yeah, she does look like her. Yeah, that's one of the things I recommended to my clients, was just allow yourself to take breaks, go and take those deep breaths. It's more helpful than people would think. So I'm glad it's working for you.
Yes. And I think this week I'm going to try and go without the patch, because I figure that will let me know if it's working or not working. But as I said, I haven't had any fits. I haven't been shaking. I haven't been scratching at the imaginary bugs on my arms. I haven't been tapping my lung to get the vein up. So yeah, I'm very happy about that. So barring any questions, I'm gonna shut the heck up and not bring it up, you know, because I don't want people to think that I'm acting like a vegan or something like that. You know, where you have to talk about it like every 30 seconds.
Well, you know what, you talking about it could help a lot of people, so there's that. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, but most of the reformed smokers out there, it's like, you know, somebody coughs and they're like, oh, are you taking cigarettes for that cough? Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, I quit. It's like the folks that are, oh, well, I'm a vegan. Oh, really? Oh, well, thanks for introducing yourself. Mm-hmm. or some of the other food type people. Everything has to be gluten free. I bought gluten free shotgun shells for deer hunting because I want that meat to be nice and clean. So anyway,
any extremes aren't good.
Yeah. So any questions or anything else that you'd like to throw in? Because Nick, you're probably gonna have to kick your opium problem pretty soon, right?
Yeah.
Tell us why you're chasing the dragon tonight.
So I got my wisdom teeth pulled on Friday, and it started out nice. You know, I don't enjoy the pill high. I really don't. I knew going into it that I wasn't probably going to enjoy it. I like to be a little bit more active, and when you're on oxycodone, you kind of have to sit down, and especially if you have your teeth pulled out. So that really sucked. And then just recently, it was probably I think it was actually earlier today, even maybe it was. Yeah, I don't remember. I started having some complications in that. I think I got a dry socket, so that's kind of messing me up today, and it hurts a lot. So I'm on I think it's, I don't know how much it is, but a little bit of oxycodone and a whole bunch of ibuprofen, just to keep the pain down. And I'm not super high right now, but
did you have all four taken out?
Yeah, they put me out for it, so I don't remember it. So that was kind of nice.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
All right, more freedom fiends and opium filled kids when we come back from this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains, because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
This is a Freedom Fiends.
I was going to beat you to it, Lou. I'm taking over now. We're broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial...
Second hour, Nick.
That's what I'm reading, I swear. Nick,
it's not the second hour yet, though. This is the final segment of the second hour.
Oh, my Lord. Man, jeez.
You're high as a kite, and I'm looking at Lisa's cat videos on her Facebook page. My God.
I thought it was the second hour. You said second hour. You confused me.
No, I said you'll do the second hour.
Yeah, no, that's what you said. I thought you meant it was. Then you started talking. I thought, I swear I had it timed right. Oh, teaching hospital.
It's a teaching hospice. it's a teaching hospice and tobacco rehab. So let's talk more about your experience with getting your wisdom teeth out.
It's been interesting. I've never been on pain medications like this, so it was yeah, like I said, I didn't really enjoy it, but the first day, you know, I got it done at like 8:30 in the morning. They put me under, so I don't remember any of it. I just remember kind of they were talking to me. It was really, I was kind of amazed how the surgical operation, how they get prepped. I thought that was really impressive. They're all talking to me. Oh, Nick, you're doing such a good job. You didn't even flinch on the IV, and like talking me up. I'm like, oh yeah, thanks. And then I was just flat out, and I just remember being put in the wheelchair and taken out to the car. And then
my
I got
God.
Home.
Wow.
That sounded like, that almost sounds like they did open heart surgery on you with all that treatment. My God.
I know.
I'll tell you about my experience when you get done talking about your day at the spa.
Yeah. So I got home and my bottom lip and my whole chin was numb, and most of my tongue was pretty numb. And so as I was, the funnest part was trying to eat, and I kept spooning the yogurt into my chin. I just like kept jabbing my chin.
Oh.
It was the funniest thing ever. I'm glad nobody got on a video, because I was just
about
like,
to ask for video,
and I couldn't figure it out because part of my tongue was numb, so I couldn't tell if I hit my tongue or my chin until I felt it fall down my lap.
Oh,
so that was all fun. And I actually got out and I walked around. I was in public, high on the painkillers on Saturday. And on Sunday, I did all right. And then Monday, I think I was fine. Then Tuesday, I could tell I was starting to hurt a little bit. And then earlier today, I kind of realized, maybe I should call the doctor. So I called them, and I got to go back in tomorrow to get it flushed out, the dry socket thing.
Mm.
I had my wisdom teeth taken out when I was in the Army, and they took out all four of them at the same time. They didn't even use nitrous. They used some Novocaine, that's it, and definitely didn't get put under, and definitely didn't get pushed out in a wheelchair. And over in Germany, you don't have big bases like you have here, like Fort Bragg, Fort Campbell, Fort Bliss, and you know, stuff like that, where it's all one big giant base. Over there, you have what's called a caserne, at least for like the Army bases. So those are pretty much battalion size. So, and they're not really big. And in the city that I was stationed in, there were, I think, a total of 7 casernes. Well, anyway, I had to go to the nearest concern to where mine was, and it was probably close to a 2-mile walk. So anyway, it's like January or February, and I wind up having to walk back because there wasn't a shuttle running anytime soon. I felt pretty rough, so I walk back, and down this little farm road, I'm leaving this frozen trail of drool, because you know they shoot the Novocaine in your mouth, and it's like baby, you know, you can't speak, you're drooling, it's a mess. But I got no dry sockets, no infections. I didn't even bleed on my pillow. I lost a bunch of weight. Oh, and I smoked while. You know, right after it was done. So that doctor that yanked those things out, he did a good job. Thank you for your service, buddy. And so anyway, yeah, that's my story. Oh, and yeah, they gave me a little bit of the dope, and like yours, it was low dosage. We'll be back, second hour, coming right up.
Hey, this is Squizcar Squig Elves from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. By sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
2 designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
3 designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Bees Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And this time it is the second hour. It's not just this drug
guy. You're high.
I swear I've been on for an hour at least last time.
Nick's training to take Rush Limbaugh's place, because you know Rush Limbaugh was like calling for jailing all drug addicts while getting arrested for like working two different doctors or more to get like extra oxycodone than he was addicted to.
I've done shows
high. I did when I had my colonoscopy. Lou doesn't like me to talk about it on air, but and they gave me like propofol, which is what Michael Jackson was taking when he died, which, you know, it's good. Michael Jackson died on it. I was still high when I did the show that night. And then another time I like broke a rib coughing and they gave me oxycodone or Vicodin or something. And I did a few shows high as directed, of course. And I'm as I remember, I was charming and witty. I must have been.
I'm sure you said that about when you were a heroin addict also.
Oh, yeah.
How does taking Vicodin and Oxy impact your addiction? Because I know you've been clean for, what, 20-some years now?
Yeah. Well, you got to use them as directed, or pretty much as needed as directed, but not... I always say that if you're using them as needed for pain, it's okay. If you're using them as needed for boredom, it's a relapse. You know, okay. it doesn't say take as needed for boredom. So, you know, I mean, I take them as needed. But a problem with taking them as needed is a lot of times the amount that they prescribe for the first day, especially after having a procedure, really aren't enough to get rid of the pain. So you end up having to take, you know, 2 every 4 hours, which will get rid of the pain and will get you high. But then you should go back, you know, when you get better, you don't keep doing that. So for more examples, see the season episode ender of season 3 of Marin, where Marin relapses. It's pretty funny and it's pretty dead on. So speaking of people who have a high opinion of themselves, we're going to talk about libertarian sociopaths and what makes them tick. And I have done a lot of complaining about libertarian rock stars. I have a theory that, like, for the most part, the worst of the worst floats to the top in liberty. But I'm not going to name those people by name and talk about them tonight. Maybe never again. I don't know if I need to ever again, because Angela Keaton has made her blog public. Anarchist Bitch is the name of her blog. I'm saying that on air because it's the name of it, and it's, you can say that once a year. It's angelakeaton.wordpress.com. This thing is so edgy, it makes me look like Wonder Bread, man. The first article is called, "For F's Sake, Let's Kill Celebritarians." And it's basically saying, what's wrong with all the rock stars in Liberty? But she's a... And it's not like... She's jealous. She is a rock star in Liberty. Like, you know, she's on TV all the time. She's on Fox. She's on CNN, you know, and she's on the Freedom Fiends. But she finally, like, she's getting in trouble for this. Like, she's going after people that, I don't know, there's people that want her to stop that anyway. So I'm just going to post
Angela Michael
Keaton. Yeah.
I've met you in person. You do look like Wonder Bread.
Yeah. Okay. No, but inside I'm dark and full of cobwebs and creepy stuff. So, but she,
well, that's the Uncle Fester part of it.
Right. She's weirder. She's weirder and cooler than me. That's what I'm saying. So go to Anarchist Bitch. It's angelakeaton.wordpress.com for if you want to hear all the named celebritarians and why they're sociopaths. But I'm talking about liberty from top to bottom, from like, you know, the most famous people in the world to, you know, the self-appointed therapists in Canada with mommy issues, down to like some newly minted libertarian who you've never heard of who lives in his dorm room. Like, there seem to be a higher percentage of sociopaths. And my theory is that it's because sociopaths hate authority and libertarians hate authority. So if you're a sociopath, you know, if you basically have, if you only mimic human emotions and, you know, would do anything you could get away with for yourself, regardless of who it harms, that's sociopathy. If you're like that, your whole life, authority figures have been yelling at you. And then you find liberty and you find this, you know, philosophy where it's not only okay, it's like required to reject authority. You think, and then I've found so many people that like wrap the non-aggression principle, like behave in a violation of the NAP, but wrap it in the NAP. I have an example. This happened to me yesterday. So, and this guy was a really good friend of a really good friend of mine. If he wasn't, I just would have like ignored him. But I let him kind of get under my skin because I was like, oh, he's a friend of so-and-so. That guy is really cool. This guy must be cool too. Like, I'm 51 years old. I'm still learning life lessons. Like, you know, somebody vouching for somebody doesn't necessarily mean they're cool. So this guy, I posted this meme. I hit share on a meme, as we often do when we wake up in the morning and we're having our coffee. And it was a meme about how this sociopathic philosophy guy from Canada with mommy issues backs Trump. And it says he backs Trump in 2016. And this friend of mine started arguing with me, and he was under an illusion that I was saying the guy in Canada wants people to vote for Trump. I was just saying he has said nice things about Trump. And I said, I didn't get what he was saying. And I said, I'll bet you $100. And all of a sudden he said, took me up on it and like tried to bill me for it. He's like, you owe me. He's never said vote for somebody for president. And I'm like, no, you misunderstand. And he said I was backpedaling. And I was like, then I started IMing him. I'm like, and this is the part I wouldn't have done if it wasn't a friend of a friend. I was like, man, look, you had me wrong. You don't know what I was trying to bet. And he's like, oh, you're changing the goalpost. You know, you're being wishy-washy. You're not a good libertarian. And I was like, man, look, I have health problems. I can't have this argument with you right now. You know, I've got high blood pressure. This kind of argument could literally put me in the hospital. He heard that, and instead of backing off, and like I was asking a friend of a good friend for like a little bit of, you know, act like a human, I'm not up to this, he started like trying to like push me to a heart attack. Like he didn't relent, and he's like, oh, well, maybe, and like literally trying to kill me after I said like this kind of stuff can kill me, and he kept trying to hammer at me. And then like, you know, I got over it. I went to sleep, and then I woke up the next day, and he'd sent me an email with a screenshot that, you know, when you post on like a page, like the Freedom Fiends page, and you're not an admin, you think it's visible to everyone, but it's really over in the corner. And like, I checked those like every 4 months, and he was like livid that I hadn't responded to it yet. So he took screenshots of it and sent it to me. And here's what he said. He said, I didn't receive the response of an effeminate brat, nor was I instantly blocked. So I can only assume you did not see the following Facebook post. He says, I've screenshotted the entire post before you deleted it. I can only assume you deleted it because you realized you're wrong and lying. I'll lecture you about how you should show humility and admit when you're wrong rather than berating someone for calling you out on it. But I know that'd be a waste of time. Instead, like, he's trying to like make me right. He's so sure he's right. He's like putting a boot on my head with this next thing he is. So basically, he goes on to try to blackmail me for $100. He says, here's the Bitcoin address you can send the $100 you owe me to. Like, he was signing me up for a contract I'd never agreed to. You know, we were still hammering out the terms of whether or not I was going to agree to it. And he decided that I'd signed it. Sends me a Bitcoin address. He says, be a good liberty advocate and follow through on your contract. So he has signed me up for a contract and he's billing me for it. And then he says, I will keep the logs of that post and your private messages for the next time you feel about lying about someone else. So he's blackmailing me, basically like, be good or I'm going to, you know, be good and or pay me or I'm going to out your secret, you know, like the things I just admitted that I said, you know. So then 2 hours later, he says, he goes through like three times of posting the price of Bitcoin every few hours. Like, here's the exchange rate you need to use. And then he says, I expect prompt payment. I hope you use this as a lesson to stop spending your days obsessing over others and lying about them. It's not healthy. Perhaps it's why you are dying. Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
That's so it sounds crazy. Like a constitution hugger signing you on to something that you never signed.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and like, you know, what we knew about this guy before was like, oh, he's a decent libertarian. He talks about liberty. He's into liberty, you know. But this is not the first time I've had interactions like this with people. Like, not exactly the same things, but the same kind of crazy. And especially going from, like, being my buddy, chatting, like, hey, yeah, we're like, being really friendly to, like, they're trying to destroy me in 5 minutes. That's a sign of a sociopath, man. So do you guys have experiences with people like this? Do you want to tell some?
I'd like to jump in and say one of the things I've kind of noticed with libertarians, and I see this in the – I've noticed this in the Libertarian Party mostly, that the libertarianism will attract some really, really weird people. And you have to admit, if you're a narco-capitalist, if you're a libertarian, you're pretty weird. Like, on some level,
yeah,
you're weird.
Yeah, two people.
And a lot of the time, there are a lot of people who can be, these, like, really antisocial and have those behaviors. And then there are a decent amount, I think you're right, of sociopaths. And I think it's weird, but part of it, I think, is that libertarianism is pretty accepting of people.
Yeah, of weird. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, we bring in that kind of crowd, I guess. And it's disappointing, but at the same time, I don't know. It's weird. And I haven't had many situations where I've had to deal with libertarian sociopaths, but I do know some people with some very, that, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know how to diagnose people, but they have an extreme lack of empathy. And
I think it's a lot of Asperger's syndrome, too, which is nothing like sociopathy. But, like, I know people in Liberty, a lot of them, who say they're have Asperger's syndrome. I don't think it's a bad thing. Buford, I'm just saying, does. Like, yeah, he says he does, and he's a man of action around the world. You know, he's not he doesn't sit in front of a computer all day. Is what I'm saying. You know.
Yeah.
More Asperger's and fiends coming right up.
Fiends burgers. They're made of yaks.
Libertarian sociopaths in the food pyramid.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Talking to Nick Hazelton and Lisa, is it DeLasio?
It is. You got it.
All right, cool. We're talking about libertarian sociopaths, and I gave an example of one I encountered that, you know, I mean, I think I'm done with him. I'm certainly not going to pay him his $100 of you know, give me money or I will expose your documents. Yeah, that's not a contract I signed. I mean, if this guy like swats me or something, you know, there's people who know who he is, but I'm not going to say his name on the air. But you want to say someone's name on the air. We're not going to say this person is a libertarian sociopath, but this is an example of how libertarians can tend to behave in a way. Well, this guy's not a libertarian, too. He calls himself one, but
right.
How people in liberty, in the liberty community who are in it, tend to behave in ways that if they behaved that way in person, they'd probably get punched in the nose. Or if they behave that way outside of liberty, even not in person, people would probably punch him in the nose. And I'm not saying this guy should be punched in the nose, but I'm saying, like, I think that's part of it. I think the internet, I said this the other day, has fostered a world where people who would never meet otherwise get to behave in each other in a way they would never behave in person. And I think that people do this younger and younger. You know, these kids today, like, this is how people learn to communicate now, is without any consequence, you know? So if you can say anything you want to anybody and they don't punch you in the face, you know, society goes that way. And I also think this guy that kind of ganged up on me with his own brain, both sides of his split personality or whatever, he's a hardcore gamer and like runs a gaming site and stuff. And I talked to Ben Stone this morning on the phone. If I get him early in the day, he's really good. It was like 9 a.m. So I told him about this guy, and he said, you know, people say that gaming like makes you go out and kill people. I don't think it makes you go out and kill people, but I think it makes people do like what this guy did to me, because it's such a competition of like somebody in a remote place, not in the same room with you, and your whole thing is like dominating and destroying them. And, you know, they tend to want to do that and have this winning attitude outside of, you know, I mean, this guy's like somebody who's never done anything in his life, and he's very immature, and he's calling me like, well, I didn't get an immature, childish, girlish answer from you. Like, dude, you don't even know. You know, you haven't lived any life at all. You live with your mother, and you're saying this stuff to me. So maybe he'll swap me, but yeah, people know who he is. All right, yeah. So what's your story about Austin Peterson?
Well, Austin Peterson, a couple of months ago, one of his writers plagiarized a friend of mine and part of an article that I wrote. It was about the government imposing laws on people running lemonade stands and things like that, just silly laws.
Yeah.
And the graphic that was used in the article was one that I created. And so I saw that come up on his page in my feed on Facebook, and I said, oh, I recognize that graphic. Let me read the article. Read the article and recognized a lot of the content in it. So I very politely commented and said, this part of this is plagiarized, and that graphic, I created that graphic for my employer. Could you please give credit or change the graphic? And instead of responding, he removed my comment and blocked me. Yeah, I had a couple of unpleasant interactions with him before that, and in one of them, I was kind of just joking around with him another time, and he posted an article, 10 Reasons to Vote for Ted Cruz, and I thought, this is in no way libertarian, is this a joke, you know, what's going on here? So I commented on that and just said, when are you going to change the name of your site to the Republican Republic? And he got really mad at me, and he called me a name that I won't say on the radio. And a lot of people jumped in and had my back and said, you know, whoa, you didn't have to get personal. You know, she was kind of joking. But hey, you know, when are you going to change the name of your site? Because you do sound like a Republican. What libertarian would, you know,
would vote, promote first of all, Ted second Cruz. Of all, vote for Ted Cruz. But
right. Yeah,
and you know, I personally don't believe in intellectual property, but I think in a libertarian paradise, I think plagiarism would be a crime because it's fraud. And I think that using someone's image without permission wouldn't be a crime, but I think it would be like nobody would do business with you if you didn't give it attribution when asked.
I think so too.
It would definitely be in bad taste.
Yeah, and what bothered me about it was it was him, because I already was starting to not agree with a lot of the things that he was saying.
Yeah.
I already had unpleasant interactions. Anybody else who used my work, fine, great, go for it. I don't care.
And but Steve Miller Miller nailed it last night too. He said, you know, it's not a matter of laws, or it's a matter of if you're in a creative industry, don't be not creative.
There's that too.
There's that, yeah.
I agree.
We'll be back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiends. I had an interesting experience yesterday morning or the day before. I can't remember what, but I was driving around here for work up here in Bear, Saskatchewan, and I sent this to Michael, so you guys may have seen it already. As I'm listening to the local talk radio for the Bear, Saskatchewan area, they're starting off with, when I first got in the car and I'm driving around, I hear like an interview with a lady who runs a local diner or cafeteria. And so she's announcing what the specials are going to be for the rest of the week and like up through Monday or something like that. I can't remember. And then it switches over to the trivia question. And the question was, what is the most regifted gift? So I'm listening to these people call in and I'm like, okay, all right, they sound pretty normal. And that whole interview with the cafeteria lady seemed a little crazy, but then this guy calls in and he's going to answer the question. But first he has to announce that his son has a compound bow and some gently used hunting clothing for sale. And then he goes out and gives a phone number out. Ooh. And then he takes a shot at the trivia and he gets it wrong. And by the way, the number one regifted gift is socks. So anyway, I'm listening because I'm doing a fair amount of driving in the area, and I'm listening. And, you know, somebody else calls in and he's like, "Oh yeah, I got these mason jars, you know, that I'm giving away, and then I also got this stuff here for sale that I make, and blah blah blah." I'm like, "My God, that is the new Freedom Fiends format." So we're going to talk about what life would be like without government. And if you got some used trash and trinkets that you want to sell, you just give us a call and let everybody know what you got.
That's great.
So while we're waiting for our next caller to let us know about the old gym shoes that they have for sale, Lisa, you came across an article, and that comes from Pew Research Center. So tell us about what that is and what the findings were.
Well, the article caught my attention because the title is Beyond Distrust, How Americans View Their Government. And I thought, well, okay, this looks interesting to me. And maybe people are kind of, you know, changing their viewpoint on this. And what they came up with was only 19% of people polled said that they can trust the government always or most of the time. And that's among the lowest levels in the last 50 years. And only 20% of the people polled said that government programs are being well run. And they also, there's a very small percentage, only, let's see, 74% of people polled said that most elected officials put their own interests before those of the people. And the majority believe that ordinary Americans would do a better job of
55%.
Running the country. Right, 55%.
Now, what I would like to see come out of this is for people to realize that the country can't be run. Because when people say, we need somebody to run the country, well, the country isn't a machine, you know, where you put some metal in, you push a button in it, and it presses the metal into like an auto part shape or something like that, like a fender. Mm-hmm. It's the country is the people. So when you say, I want somebody to run the country, you're saying, I want somebody to run the people. When you're saying that you want somebody to run the people, you're saying that you want a central planner or a controller or a slave master. And that makes you either a slave or a socialist. And there's really not a heck of a lot of difference between the two. But anyway, What were the things that were measured as far as things that government does?
Well, there were mixed views on government's role in certain issues. So most people feel that the government's major role is to keep the country safe from terrorism, which to me says that the terror propaganda campaign is working. I mean, we've got the Patriot Act and the NSA and all these things that I see a lot of people complaining about, but apparently, you know, these numbers show that people are kind of in support of that, or that at least they want the government to do something to prevent terrorism. They also think the government has a big role in responding to natural disasters, keeping our food and medicine safe.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And for the numbers on there, it says 94% believe that keeping the country safer from terror is a major, or government should have a major role, or it does have a major role. Now, 72% believe that government is doing a good job. And as far as responding to natural disasters, 88% feel that government should do that, and 79% feel that they're doing a good job. My God, have these people, were they born like yesterday? I mean, don't they remember Hurricane Katrina? Don't they remember, what was the hurricane that went through New York and some of the New England states up in your area? Was it Sandy?
Sandy, an absolute nightmare. I visited New York about, I'd say it was like a year after, and there were still buildings in the area near the water where they were hit really hard that still didn't have power. They were still running on generators. There were still flooding issues. So I don't know what their definition of handling things well is, but I think it's been, you know, and Katrina definitely is a perfect example of how abysmal the response has been.
Yeah, because when you get like FEMA or Department of Fatherland Security or whoever was down there, you know, and I could see a border guard on the outskirts of New Orleans saying, "We have a Walmart truck here with water and emergency supplies," and then somebody at headquarters saying, "Tell them to get lost. They don't have authorization." Our trucks will be here next month.
Next month. Yeah, I heard a lot of horror stories about people getting money from FEMA and then being told they had to give it back. All sorts of bad management there, I suppose.
Yeah, give poor people money in a disaster and then ask for it back. LOL. Right. One of my favorites from Hurricane Sandy was when I saw the picture of the sign on the front window of the FEMA office. This is office closed due to inclement weather.
You've got to be kidding. That really happened?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Not even sure what to say.
I wrote an article for the Freedom Fiends blog on that particular storm, and particularly the reaction. And I think the opening line of it was something like, the New York area was hit with destruction, misery. Oh, and a hurricane hit it too.
Oh, goodness. That seems about right.
Yeah, it was absolutely horrible. So I think anybody that is advocating that government should be the lead group on disaster relief, I think they're on crack. I think they're on a bunch of Nick's dragon chasing tooth medicine.
Well, I experienced a hurricane Isabel, and I don't remember what year that was. It was early 2000s, I guess, and we didn't have power for 2 weeks, and we just grouped together with all of our neighbors and helped each other out. We cooked all of the food we had in our fridges and freezers out on the grill. We chopped wood. We helped repair things. And we didn't get any kind of assistance from government at all. We didn't seek that or expect it. But I think that, generally speaking, humans are better able to just kind of handle that stuff together cooperatively rather than looking for some kind of rescue.
That sounds like government. My everyday life. Yeah.
Yes. Good.
What, no electricity, floods, and stuff like that?
The flooded basement. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when the Eastern Seaboard lost power. When was that? It was a couple of years after 9/11, so everybody automatically assumed that it was terrorism because, you know, everything was terrorism. If the power flickered for like half a second, you know, oh, terrorism. And I remember how there wasn't a bunch of panicking or anything like that. Although where I was working at the time, the pregnant lady that worked in the back office got caught in the elevator. And that just like totally proved every single stereotype that I'd ever seen on like the on the emergency worker type shows. You know, all the cop shows and everything. We got a pregnant lady that needs to be evacuated from the elevator or the crash car, whatever. But anyway, yeah, I mean, people didn't go out looting and rioting or anything like that. And it was really kind of relaxing for a couple of days. There's a guy in my neighborhood. He owned a restaurant, had a bunch of food that was thawed out. I think his stuff in the freezer was okay by, and he brought it back. He's like, anybody need any food? And it was really, I think people really came together quite well. As a matter of fact, I remember an incident similar to that. There was a storm that came through the area, and I was just a wee little bugger, maybe 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And we were without power for about 3 or 4 days. And you know, a lot of trees came down, and you know, after the storm was over, people came out of their houses, looked around. The men grabbed their chainsaws and axes and stuff like that, and went around cutting up the wood that landed on people's houses. You know, particularly with like the elderly folks, because there are a lot of older people in the neighborhood. And we just all went around, and you know, us kids, we grabbed what we could. You know, moving the smaller branches, you know, sweeping stuff up, and. Yeah, we went about it, and by the end of the day, the neighborhood was clean.
That's how it was in my neighborhood. It was great, and I hadn't lived in the neighborhood very long prior to the hurricane, and it was nice because I got to really know my neighbors. And strangely enough, that's right around the time that I started learning about libertarian philosophy, because one of my neighbors said, "Hey, the way you talk, you sound like a libertarian." And I said, "What's that?" I didn't even know there was a name for the how I think. And so it was great for me. It kind of set me on this path that I'm on now. So thank you, Hurricane Isabel, I guess, for that.
Yeah, nothing like a disaster turned people away from statism and towards voluntary cooperation.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was like. We all just really helped each other out, and we had a good time. And, you know, part of me was kind of sad when the power came back on, in a way, because all of that, you know, we all still did things together after that, but you know, it was less involved. But it was really nice to see everybody pull together and help each other out. We had one neighbor who drove all the way to Pennsylvania to find generators for us. He just went on a mission on a road trip, and it was nice. Everybody just collaborated and, you know, did it completely without any kind of authority or government.
Yep. Now, something else I want to add about the survey results and the numbers that we're giving out. And that looks like it is a combination of both parties. So they divide the groups into Democratic voting or Democratic leaning and Republican voting or Republican leaning. So,
right.
But anyway, yeah, we'll be back with more of this right after this trip to the market.
Listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Admit it, you hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Freedom Fiends. Final segment, Redemption in the Third Act. So, Lisa, you were talking about a poll that says that the majority of Americans don't really trust the government, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So, and then, yeah, something funny that you wanted to mention.
Yeah, well, as any libertarian knows, the question that we get asked most is when we talk about smaller or no government is who's going to take care of the roads? Who's going to build the roads? Who's going to maintain them? As if the government's doing a good job at that anyway, right? So there's a paragraph in the article accompanying the poll information that says, roughly half in each party say the federal government does well in maintaining roads, bridges, and other infrastructure, but only 52% of Democrats and 50% of Republicans think that they're doing a good job with roads. So about half of people, yet that's the argument we constantly hear. That's the first thing that comes up. Who's going to take care of the roads? And I'll ask people, what are your roads like where you live? Because here they're pretty bad, especially after the winter.
Yeah, Michigan is really horrible for roads. Now, something that I like to do, because I don't just troll when I'm fishing or on Facebook. I like to troll in real life. Mm. And with these small government Republicans, they will talk about how absolutely horrible and incompetent government is. Mm-hmm. They'll just berate it, talk about it like it's just like the absolute worst, stupidest thing on earth. And my response is, oh, okay, well, let's get rid of it. And then their response is, oh, we can't do that. We need government for, you know, doing all the stuff that they said that government is absolutely horrible at.
Right. And of course, they'll say, we just need to get the right people in charge. But how long have people been saying that? I mean, I've been voting for, well, not voting, but I've been a voting age for a really long time. And I've heard this, you know, year after year, every election season. We just need the right person in to fix things. And if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and you're getting the same results, isn't that the definition of insanity? Let's try something different.
We just need the right central planners to come up with a series of 3 and 5 year plans to, you know, create the perfect utopia and workers' paradise. And that's what they're saying. And
right.
They're essentially saying, you know, we want better socialism. And yeah. The reality is socialism always turns out the way that it does because it doesn't matter who the central planners are. And once you understand that properly centrally planning something like that is an impossibility, you know, it doesn't matter who those planners are. So knock it off.
Right. So, yeah, it's not working.
Now, something that I noticed from this article here, it says Republicans less likely to see a major role for government in most areas. If you look at the numbers, many of them are very similar to the Democrats or the folks that lean Democrat. Like, for example, you know, keeping the country safe from terrorism is 93% for Democrats and 95% for Republicans. And I know a lot of this stuff is pretty close. So the only time that you have any real major disparity is when you get into the different safety net issues, such as ensuring access to quality education, ensuring basic income for people 65 plus. And the only things that really take any hits are the Republicans have a very low opinion of ensuring access to health care or helping people to get out of poverty. Other than that, they're pretty well status. Everything is well over 50%.
Yeah, so. I noticed that too. The helping people get out of poverty. I guess very low number of Democrats think that the government's doing a good job with that. And the healthcare part was interesting to me too, because didn't they want Obamacare? Yeah, I guess they're not happy with how that's going, and that those numbers kind of surprised me.
Well, they got what they wanted, and they're getting it good and hard now.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing that's really interesting to me, and there was a write-up on CBS DC. So I think it's the local Mortar on the Potomac affiliate of the CBS network. Mm-hmm. And their article on this, because they're writing about the Pew Research poll, it says, report, more than one of four Americans believe government is the enemy. Now, ooh, this is a little bit misleading, because when you get into the second paragraph, Pew Research found that 20% of registered voters say that they think of government as an enemy, up 8 points to 96. They're only referring to the federal government. Well, you guys will figure out soon enough, all of it is the enemy. It's an enemy, yes, occupation force. And the sooner that you guys get over your statism and start working with your neighbors, it'll get better. So, thanks for coming on the show, Lisa. Nice to talk to you, Nick. Good luck in rehab. Ooh. And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com. And for more Lisa, go to nutritionalanarchy.com.
Well, thank you.
And for more yaks, go to